Welcome to another Cynical Supplement. It's just me again, Aylo. This is being recorded the week after E3 is finished in Australian time. We're talking about Monday, the 19th of June, 2017. I haven't necessarily with all the post-E3 announcements and fervor, but I think I've got it covered. And also, like, we're just putting out there, was waiting to see if the guys had recorded anything else. I haven't actually had a chance to talk to the other guys since our last recording. I think it was like Ubisoft or whatever. So I don't know if anyone's talked at all about Nintendo. So this Cynical Supplement will be, I'll be covering off my high points of E3 for the year. I'll be essentially going through all my top announcements from this E3. Talking about game announcements, not like anything else really particular. And now we're talking about Scorpio to some degree. But before all of that, because we haven't touched Nintendo, as the resident Nintendo hater, apparently. I'll take that term. You know what? I'll take it. I'd be better to be infamous than to be not famous at all, right? But whatever. So I'm going to go over Nintendo's announcements from E3, because I actually think Nintendo had a pretty great showing this year's E3. Well, compared to the last one, like I didn't like the whole Zelda-only focus of last year's E3, and this one was more of a traditional direct, though. It was like the shortest thing anyone's brought to E3, aside from Devolver Digital, who we will not speak of. Like, we're talking about like a 24-minute or so little Nintendo Direct thing. That's all they had to show. But you know what? It was packed with stuff, and I'm just going to go through it. You know, like since no one else has talked about it, and Duren isn't here, so you won't get your like Nintendo guy in the pocket opinion. So like, be warned. But I have to say, like, a lot of this is actually kind of I'm interested in. So I don't know if this is in order. This is from the Kotaku article, which is everything Nintendo announced at E3, and I added one more because it wasn't on the article. So the article's wrong. Fuck you, Kotaku. Alright. So, Xenoblade 2 was shown at by Nintendo, and I actually think that was a pretty great showing in that, like, they're sticking to a 2017 release date. Now, first and foremost, I will say bullshit. That is not happening. I refuse to believe that game's coming out in 2017 until it is on shelves. I say on shelves rather than in my Switch, because I think that was a great showing for people who like Xenoblade. As a person who has no idea what the draw is of Xenoblade at all is, that didn't really grab me at all. It looked like anime-ass anime in a bad way to me. I'm the last person who would be slagging off anime. I actually like anime to a large degree. Some of my favorite things ever would have been anime. Like, fucking, I am unashamedly a massive fan of Bleach and Naruto and Fairy Tail. Like, let's just say I don't like the best anime, but I like anime a whole bunch. You know what? Like, Lelouch the Revolution, or Lelouch? I forget the actual thing. That's actually pretty awesome. Season 2 kind of falls apart to some degree, but comes back at the end. I didn't mind some of the Netflix anime. Whatever, I'm not going to sit here and talk about anime. But let's talk about Xenoblade 2. It's about a dude and a girl, and the girl is a sword, and I don't know. Like, that was the weirdest thing. It seemed so, I don't want to say up its own ass, but it is so anime. It was beyond the pale. Like, that's a fair point. I love Persona, and Persona is anime as fuck. But I think there's something about Xenoblade, both in terms of the character designs, the costume designs, the world designs, the enemy design, like something about a combination of all that just being turned up to anime out of 10, It just goes past where I'm really willing to go to. Maybe if it comes out and reviews extraordinarily well and people say the story does not suck, I might give it a shot. For people who like Xenoblade, apparently it was cool. They showed a lot of Xenoblade. And it's up to you, dear listener, to decide whether that's good or bad. For me, it was bad. Actually turned me off that game. I was more interested in when I knew nothing about the game than when I found out about it. Kirby is probably my favorite Nintendo character. And this seems like a pretty cool Kirby game. I don't know if it is a original or a port. It looks like I recognize a lot of the stuff in there, like assets and boss fights, some of the footage they showed. I saw it was multiplayer, which is cool, but I don't know if I'd play that game multiplayer. But that said, no, Kirby looked pretty nice, like visually nice. They do 2D well, and Kirby is an awesome character, so there you go. Moving on. Oh, God. So, when the dude from the Pokemon Company comes on screen, part of me just groans constantly. That's just a constant groaning sound just playing on loop in the back of my head. But the other part of me is just like a little child who can't help but like get really, really, really excited. Like, this is probably what people who love Mario feel like whenever they see Mario Odyssey. Like, the presence of the Pokemon Company is enough to get me excited. It's kind of sad. Before E3, they had that announcement with Pokken Tournament coming to Switch, and that was sad. They also like announced like Sun and Moon, whatever, Ultimate Edition or whatever the fuck they were. Mega Sun, I don't care, I'm not gonna buy it. I was hoping for a Stars announcement. That's whatever, every time they come up, that's what happens. But we got the second best thing, which is a official announcement for a mainline Pokemon game coming to Switch, in development now. And that company turns around pretty fast. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was out next year or the year, early 2019. And that is deeply exciting to me. I can't help it. It's just the little Pokemon playing kid inside me that just gets so excited whenever I hear about Pokemon finally coming to a home console. And the Switch is the best kind of console for that, because not only is it a home console, but it's also a handheld. It's like the perfect thing for Pokemon. Like, I can't wait. But that's all I'll say about that. Moving on. This is one of those things where I think a person who isn't that invested called it the moment they saw Stars on screen. But anyone else who actually like was deeply invested was holding out until the logo showed, and then probably their minds blowed. I don't know. But Metroid Prime 4 was finally announced, in development. So no footage, nothing. It's just, hey, we've started working on Metroid Prime 4. And again, I'm really happy for people who have been looking forward to this for a long time, who was waiting for a new Metroid Prime, for Nintendo to go back to that franchise. And this year, man, they came back to it in a big way. I'll talk about the Ultra Metroid announcement later. But I'm happy that those people are getting a Metroid Prime 4. Personally, couldn't care less, only because I'm not a Metroid person. A game we'll be talking about later will probably be my first Metroid game, because that looks excellent. But yeah, Metroid Prime 4, hey. Called as soon as I saw Stars. I'm really happy for people who like Metroid. Next up, Yoshi happened. Moving on, Zelda DLC happened. Moving on, Rocket League happened. Moving on, finally we ended on Mario Odyssey. Okay, that's a Mario game. I feel like, again, I'm not the best person to talk about this, but I just want to like put the thoughts out there. Mario Odyssey looks interesting. It looks very different to me as a person who's been an external observer to Mario. As the year is progressing, I have been on microphone multiple times saying I'll play Mario, but kind of like Xenoblade, I can see why people would like it, But the more I see of that game, the less I kind of want to play it. I don't know. There's just something about an open world platformer that just does not appeal to me. It's just not my style. But I might, as I said, like if you asked me a couple months ago, I would have said I'd definitely pick up Mario. But now I look at it, it's like I'd just be picking it up to say I bought it, and it would. I don't see myself enjoying it. I don't know. I'm just a person who looks for story in games. I think that's the thing. I think that's the aimlessness of a Mario game. I know like the ultimate purpose is to, you know, collect all the moons and for the rest of the worlds to finally get the Peach. But God, that holds nothing for me. Like I couldn't name something that I would be less interested in except for fucking Yoshi. Oh my God. Like, but to be fair, graphically, it looked good. I won't say it looked excellent. It definitely looks much better than Zelda. But I think the thing that really blew me away about that trailer was the music. Like, musically, like, that is a awesome. I love the style they're going with for the new Mario game. Like, Odyssey's got, like, this, like, kind of swinging style to it, especially with, like, these clothes and the music and New Donk City. With Pauline, I think what her name is, as the mayoress. Oh man, that there's such a style in that game. It's not Persona levels of style, but it's the most style I've seen in a Mario game. That's saying something. And it's also, yeah, like the reveal of the possession mechanic was interesting. I can see why that would make a lot of people very excited. So here's a clear example, all right? A lot of people would see Mario possessing a frog and then the frog having a mustache as a really awesome, fun thing that they can love and get behind. When I see that, I'm just like, huh. So, frog's got a mustache, huh? All right. Dishonored did this ages ago. I mean, you know, I can't help it. I can't help look at the mechanic and go, eh, whatever. Like, fucking, it's been done before. Or, I kind of just when I see Mario, I just don't see the wonder. I don't see the fun of it. Like I can see why people would find it fun, but me personally, I just don't see it. That said, though, Easy Allies is a fantastic group of dudes, and they were head over heels for that Mario Odyssey trailer and whatever they played of it. I'm really happy for people who like Mario that they're getting a good Mario game that definitely looks like it's coming out this year. And it's trying out some new stuff. Like, it's a more open structure. It's an open world game. It's got, like, mini quests in it and stuff. The possession mechanic's really interesting, different to anything they've done before. Like, just across the board, it seems like a cool new Mario game for people who like Mario games. Moving on. Finally, in terms of things Nintendo announced for this E3, at least as far as I know, and probably the game I'm most excited for on this whole list, aside from Pokemon, Metroid Prime Samus Returns, I'm pretty sure the name is. Let me just double check that. Let's see. Metroid Prime Samus Returns? I think that's the name? Am I crazy here? Yeah, no, that's it. Yeah. So Metroid Prime Samus Returns is a remake of what I believe is Metroid 2. Which has been recently remade, weirdly enough, AM2R, another Metroid 2 remake, which is that fantastic, by all accounts, fan-made version. So it's kind of interesting that both Nintendo and a fan project were working on this at the same time, though I believe, first of all, it's not Nintendo. It's the group of dudes who did that really bad Castlevania game, a 3D Castlevania game on 3DS. But that said, like, even though, what was it, Mercury Steam? I forget the name of the developer. But even though they did a poor job there, like, by all accounts, this Metroid game, Metroid Samus Returns, I don't know what it is. I think it was this, like, Castlevania Symphony of the Night just gave me that bug. I'm really down for another Metroidvania, and this seems to be a really good one of those, so... This could be my first Metroid game. It actually probably will be my first Metroid game. And it looks fantastic. The crazy thing, though, is it's on fucking 3DS and not Switch. Like, holy cow. I only just realized this now. Like, I have a 3DS, so that's not a big problem, but I'm just looking at this, I literally just realized it's only on 3DS. That is the weirdest thing to me. That's the weirdest thing to me. Oh, man. But no, it looks fantastic. And everyone, like, it moved really well. Like, I haven't seen too much of it myself, except for the announcement bit on the Treehouse stream while watching Easy Allies. And far out, like, that, just the movement of that game, the shooting in that game, like, everything looked really sharp for a 3DS game in general, and just for a Metroid Prime game in general. So I'm willing to try that out. It's probably the thing, again, aside from Pokemon, that Nintendo announced that was the coolest. And that's Nintendo. If Durin was here, I'd probably go, like, further speculation about, like, what's coming around the corner, what we'll see in the next direct, all that kind of stuff. But since he's not, that's pretty much what I ran out there. I don't want to abuse people with more negative thoughts about Nintendo from me. But I will say, yeah, I think they had a pretty good E3. And you know what? There's them having three games I'm interested in, Pokemon, Metroid Prime, Samus Returns, and Metroid Prime 4. That's more than I can say for any Nintendo in a long time. So, you know what? They had a good show. So from there, I'm going to move on to pretty much my overall impressions of E3. And how I'm going to approach this, instead of just doing, like, you know, just a bit of a ramble about my favorite things I saw at the show, I just put a list together of each press conference and the my favorite things I saw from each press conference. And I just want to, like, quickly maybe list them off. I won't talk about all of them, I don't think. Maybe not. But I'll, like, generally list them off as my favorite things from each press conference and just say, like, a couple words. Just so you can get a feel for, like, what some of the biggest stuff coming out of there was. And this isn't the biggest stuff. Like, I haven't even got Battlefront on this list because it's just not my style. Nor have I got Mario Odyssey on this list because it's not my style either. But this is, like, you know, my top takeaways from E3 and my favorite moments for E3. And we'll start with EA. So I've only got two things here for EA. But these, again, like, I've cherry-picked my top things from E3. So... Two Strings isn't exactly, like, out of the norm, but A Way Out from EA, that's the game by the guys who made Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons. It's co-op only, local and online, and looks freaking awesome. It's a prison break game where I just haven't seen anything like it before. In the way they do multiplayer, let's say split screen, even though, like, early LEGO games did a really interesting thing with split screen, with, like, the split dynamically moving around. This kind of takes that to a more cinematic level where you're looking at a vertical stripe and maybe a widescreen shot, or like I don't know if they do this, but maybe even like a 2.35x1, like a cinema style shot in one side and like a vertical stripe in the other, or like top and bottom splits and so on. And it adapts to story situation rather than just placement on a map. And I just love everything about the presentation, the feel of the game, the tone of the game, and the developers. The developers are awesome. Next up is Anthem, is my second and last takeaway from EA. I was going to have this under the Microsoft banner, but I was talking about it here just because. Anthem looked really awesome. It is by probably my favorite group of developers. Oh, sorry, that's not true. One of my favorite group of developers in the world, like people who made Mass Effect 2, even though some of them core people from that team have left since then. And sadly, they also made Mass Effect 3. Mass Effect 3 did redeem itself with time. Citadel DLC is fantastic, etc. But Anthem, a third-person shooter set in a sci-fi universe that looks freaking amazing, made by the Mass Effect people, that could be special. From what we saw, I didn't really feel that specialness, aside from maybe like the beautiful freedom of like flying through the air and then running on the ground and diving through the oceans, like all of that in a mech suit with jump packs. And like, I can see the pieces of it fitting. It just was missing something in terms of, I don't know, just character and thrust. Like, I think the big takeaway is we still don't know what that game is about. Like, why are we doing anything? What is the storyline of this game? Will it be story focused? If it's just gameplay focused, I don't think EA can match Bungie. The Mass Effect team. I forgot which EA team they were. Montreal? I don't know. But the Mass Effect team, I don't think they can. BioWare. I forget which BioWare it is. Unless they can match Bungie when it comes to shooting and encounter design and maybe even like dungeons and raid design, I don't see a future for Anthem, especially in a year. Yeah, Destiny 2 is just... Destiny 1 was amazing. It had problems, like definitely had problems, but it was amazing. Destiny 2, if it fixes those problems, could be incredible. And Anthem, as a first out release, will have to compete with probably an expansion for Destiny 2 around the same period of time, if I was to guess. But yeah, like BioWare is just so unproven. We'll have to see. We'll have to see. But it did look very promising. Moving on. Microsoft. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things from Microsoft. And I'm cheating to some extent because Scorpio is one of them. Scorpio was a takeaway from E3 2017, not because I was sold on it or anything, but because it marks a potential turning point in the industry. Not just the Scorpio itself, but Phil Spencer, the head of Xbox's, Phil Spencer's opinions on Scorpio and his way of talking about Scorpio leads me to believe that more than ever before, he is unsure as to whether they'll ever do a full Xbox refresh again. And the fact that he actually answers that question when posed with, "I don't know." That was his response to Jeff Gerstmann, Giant Bomb. This could very well be the mark of the future of Xbox, and that is very interesting. Like, we always suppose that that could be the case, but Mark Cerny has been very particular in the Sony side of things in saying that no, they still believe in the console cycle. There will be a PlayStation 5. It's a very opposite side with Microsoft, where they're very much not sure about there being a console cycle. This could be how things work, and I have my opinions about the performance. Digital Foundry put up a piece as to why they believe that the Xbox One X is a sign of things to come, being sold at cost, and I would say again that like a lot of the things they used to make up the difference in price points between the PS4 Pro and the Xbox One, in terms of examples, like for example the vapor chamber, etc., designing a SoC, a very large SoC, all that kind of stuff, I don't think it was necessary. There is no reason, really, like honestly, why they couldn't have done two separate chips on one motherboard with a bridge. They went for bandwidth, sure, I can see that, but it's not like PCIe doesn't have bandwidth, right? It's not like it's how our computers work. So I'm sorry, but if you can't tell me that you need more bandwidth in the PCIe lane, or 8 PCIe lane, sorry, 16, whatever. I can see why they went for a large SoC. It was probably to bring overall manufacturing costs down, but when it comes to R&D costs, like I wonder if that really, really balances out. Additionally, like the failure rate of a larger chip is essentially proportion to the square of the difference in sizes, right? Like it's proportion to the different sizes by area, so you can take that as a square. It is a bigger chip, and that will cost more, and that will have more defects, and that will make it cost even more, and it can't be repurposed as a Ryzen chip or whatever because it's a particular Xbox chip, so that'll cost even more. Whereas if they'd gone for say next year you can have a Ryzen 3 chip in a console, unfettered, with like normal PCIe lanes leading to a either an overclocked Polaris or a underclocked or downclocked Vega, I can't see that being far more expensive than this SoC, this custom SoC with custom bits to it, and additionally attached to a motherboard with a vapor chamber cooler, which was only needed because they decided to go with one chip rather than two. Rather with two chips, you can definitely do a normal, more conventional cooling system. Your like weird load balancing you did on every motherboard, like that stuff has to cost something like that. I don't necessarily entirely agree with Digital Foundry. To be fair, they are potentially more knowledgeable than me, but I don't know. They seem to make a lot of assumptions that don't necessarily make sense to me. And it seemed to give Microsoft a pass in a lot of design decisions that I don't think were particularly warranted. We'll see. We'll see. I don't think that the $500 console is going to be a thing. I don't think the next generation is going to start with something as powerful as Xbox as an Xbox One X for $400, or maybe like 30% more powerful but $500. I don't think that's the case. I actually do think we'll get a generational leap in the order of magnitude that we went from PS3 to PS4. Not like from PS2 to PS3. Not like a massive increase, but a significant bump with the PS5. That said, this discussion is pretty much just because of Scorpio, and I'm really happy that that happened, and we finally know what Scorpio is and what it costs and what it looks like and how it performs, so we can get that peek into the future. And that's maybe really my takeaway from Scorpio. Do I want one? No. The fact that Microsoft is pushing everything onto both Scorpio and PC means that I will never have a reason to buy a Scorpio. I have a 980 Ti already. So I'll be able to run games just fine on my computer. I might not be able to do 4K native 60, but later this year or early next year, we'll have the Volta cards from NVIDIA, and I'm pretty sure those will be capable of it. So I'm happy to just wait for that, get a nice new graphics card, and call it a day. But for people who want to spend $500 on an all-up system, because again, my computer is probably going to be, if I was to put into US dollars and guess a price point, I'd probably say my computer is around $1,300, $1,200. That is a significantly larger investment than a Scorpio. To be fair, it's my computer, so I do use it for everything, including podcasts, except for right now, which we'll talk about later. I can see why a $500 investment for something that can do 4K 60 is appealing. It's just that, they just didn't show many exclusives that really warrant that aren't already coming or also coming to PC, right? I'm just not seeing it. But speaking of which, we'll just move on to the games, I guess. That's my Scorpio bit. Metro Exodus looked amazing. I don't have much to say about it because I haven't played previous Metro games, but just visually looked great. I love the tone of it. I haven't played a Metro game before. It might be my first Metro, depending on reviews. But in general, no, I'm happy they were able to announce that. It looks good. Dragon Ball FighterZ. Now, that is a game that I'm so glad exists. I've showed it to my friends. They are excited for it. I am excited for it. It could be my next fighter after I didn't particularly latch onto Street Fighter V. Hopefully it is. It's made by Arc, and I love the Persona fighting games. So I know they can make really good fighting games that I think are not overcomplicated. Like the beauty of the Persona fighting games, they're not overcomplicated, and they seems like they took that even further with Dragon Ball. By most accounts, it's very simple to play, and that's fun. Like I'm really happy that Dragon Ball is easy to play, looks fantastic, and it just seems to have a good roster and like a good tone, I'm so on board for Dragon Ball. One of the biggest questions, though, is will it have a standard 1v1 mode, or is it always team battles? Is it always you picking two people and getting a support character in there? We'll see. We'll see. Moving on. The Last Knight. All I have to say about this game, and this is that indie Blade Runner-y kind of game, all I have to say about this is it looks amazing. I hope and sounds amazing. The music on that trailer was fantastic too. Hopefully it lives up to that hype. I think there's a good chance of it doing so, but we'll see. And finally, Microsoft, my fourth Microsoft game that I'll be talking about. Life is Strange Before the Storm. This is interesting because since announcement, it's been found out that because of the Screen Actors Guild video game voiceover, I forget the group of dudes, SAG-AFTRA? I don't remember. Sorry, but I don't know, after work. This is a supplement. I don't want to fact check. But because of the strike of the voice actors, they won't be getting the original actress behind Chloe for this. And I think that though that's a pity, I'm fine with it because Chloe is younger in this game. And I'm not joking when I say, like, I'm so happy that this exists, that this could be in my top three, if not my particular game of show. I loved Life is Strange. Like, it wasn't my favorite game that year or anything, but it was incredible. It was fun to watch and sit through and get to know all the characters in it. And the music of those games, even though it's not original, they have fantastic soundtrack. At least they had a fantastic soundtrack in the previous Life is Strange, if you consider it as one package rather than five distinct episodes. And this being a nice, like, three-episode thing, and it's being made by a different group of dudes, so it's freeing up Don't Nod to make Life is Strange 2. There's so much to like about this. I like the time period it's set in. I would like to see those characters in a different period of their lives just to see how they work and how they act. It's interesting because you already know the end of the story before it begins, so there could be a lot of dramatic tension in here that could be really fun. But we'll see. They put off. It isn't Don't Nod, so we'll see. But I'm so excited for Life is Strange Before the Storm. All right, moving on. Ubisoft. They opened their show with something that, again, is a massive takeaway, but means nothing to me personally. Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle. Is XCOM with Mario and Rabbids. Holy shit. I am shocked at how positive the sentiment in the public is towards this game. And good on them, man. Like, good on them for turning that whole thing around, getting to a point where people care about your dumb Rabbids game with freaking Mario characters with guns. Like, I'm surprised that they're able to pull off that game in a way that didn't make everyone angry. And I admittedly looks kind of cool. Like, I probably will never play this game. In fact, I am actively not interested in it. But the way that cover destroys, like, that falls apart, looks good. Like, it makes me wish that XCOM was made by people who had, like, more, a bigger emphasis on graphics. Like, I like the way this game looks. I like the lighting of this game. I like the way people move. I like the way the battles seem balanced. Like, there's a lot about this in terms of an XCOM-like game that seems really cool. In a lot of ways, if it wasn't freaking Mario and Rabbids, I probably would be interested, but I'm not. But that said, I'm happy people who aren't me are interested. Next up is what I thought was going to be my game of show, but turned out to actually seem worse the more I saw of it. Assassin's Creed Origins. This is one of those games that like, everything I heard about this game before seeing it seemed amazing. When I saw it, the trailers looked fantastic. I loved the idea of the new battle system. And I loved the idea of the character and the time period and a lot about it. As I got more time to watch more Assassin's Creed Origins, the more I realized that they haven't changed. There's just so much about the Assassin's Creed formula that they're just rinse and repeating for this game. I'm going to take a wait and see approach. I am tentatively excited for this game, but I'm definitely reserving the possibility that it could be a total swing and a miss. The impressions about the combat system being Dark Souls, but just not as well polished, are disheartening. The enemy AI apparently isn't that great, and that's very disheartening to me. I don't know, man. I don't know. Just the world doesn't seem that different to previous Assassin's Creed games. Even though it's set in a different time period in a different freaking part of the world, like it just looks like more Assassin's Creed. I don't know. We'll have to see. I'll wait for reviews for this game, and hopefully they pull it out and reawaken that magic that I thought was there when I first saw the trailers, of just being a really cool, interesting new take with a cool character and a cool storyline. And that is the part which maybe is the part I'm missing. Like, maybe I just need to see that story and I'll be back on board. But yeah, the more I say of the gameplay, the more it seems like more of the same. And that's sad, because they took a year off for this and just doesn't seem that different. Aside from the combat system, which is supposedly just isn't as good as Dark Souls, even though it's cribbing off it. We'll see. All right. And then the big showstopper from Ubisoft, Beyond Good and Evil 2. Wow, has this been like a roller coaster ride for some people who actually care about this? Like, personally, I don't care about Beyond Good and Evil that much. I'm going to just look this up and make sure I haven't like misheard the rumors. Let's have a look. Multiplayer. All right, Kotaku, what Beyond Good and Evil 2 is now, and what its creators dream it to be? It's day zero for Beyond Good and Evil 2, Michelle Ancel told me on Monday, which is, all right, let's take a step back. When people saw this Beyond Good and Evil trailer, they lost their minds. It's a CG trailer, and it was a tone piece, which showed a lot of interesting stuff that has never been seen before. Just in terms of, like, that world just seems so unique in a wonderful way. It's like a combination of a Pixar movie with like a dystopian cyberpunk future, I guess. It just seems really interesting and cool. So unique. That's all I can say. Like, I'm lost for words here. It's just so different. But so, the crazy thing is, though, so they have that CG trailer, and it should have tipped people off that it was CG. Like, it's a CG trailer. They've been supposedly working on this game for freaking 10 years already or something, and they come up with a CG trailer as their first showing, and now Michelle Ancel is stating that this is day zero of Beyond Good and Evil 2? I mean, man, like, I have no idea. I don't think Ubisoft has any idea when this game's going to come out. And I wonder what it's going to be when it comes out. So, like, the prototype they're showing, and I'm reading this article correctly, it seems to be, like, is this a multiplayer game? Am I crazy? Multiplayer? Beyond Good and Evil 2, this is the Kotaku article. Beyond Good and Evil 2 is going to have multiplayer, though Ansel and his team aren't sure how many people will support it. It will support. They've dabbled with up to 15 players and tested their engine, but they don't plan to go massively multiplayer. Okay, so it's not a massively multiplayer game. All right, that's good. I heard it was only multiplayer. That was definitely an incorrect rumor by the sounds of things. But they look like they're doing a somewhat single-player driven game with the story, which will probably never come out, or if it does come out, be like fucking 5 years from now or in the next gen systems or something, if I was to look at this and guess, but with a large multiplayer component. And that's something. I'm happy that it's multiplayer isn't the core focus, because that would be a lie. That would feel like a lie when it comes to the whole thing. Sorry about that. A weird aside. If you want me to speak deeply about Beyond Good and Evil 2, I assume the guys talked about it more on the Ubisoft podcast, which I had to bounce out early from. But the game looks cool. And now that I know it's not a multiplayer-only game, a multiplayer-focused game, I'm interested to a large degree 5 minutes ago. There is a lot of freaking information coming out about this. Apparently there are not beta builds, but prototype builds available, and people have seen them and stuff. So go out there and have a look if you're interested. Personally, didn't play the first Beyond Good and Evil, so I'm not the person to get excited about this. But it was an interesting takeaway. It was a big moment. I loved seeing the people's reactions who are interested in Beyond Good and Evil when they saw this, and that was fun. Moving on to Sony. I only have four things from Sony here. One's a twofer, but it's just kind of like a negative rather than a positive. Horizon Zero Dawn expansion was something I'm really excited about coming out of it. Continuing that story is the best thing about that game, and I will love to see more of it. So, yep, bring me that expansion. Monster Hunter World, that will be my first Monster Hunter game, unless it's bad. If it's not bad, I'm going to play the shit out of that. It looked awesome. A negative here, God of War and Detroit Become Human. I did not like those trailers at all. I think they were bad trailers. I wanted a tone piece from God of War, like another tone piece, and we got like a gameplay piece, which I didn't need to see because I already trusted their ability to do good gameplay. And for Detroit, they showed a character I could not give less of a fuck about. In fact, I actively dislike that character from Detroit Become Human. So those are bad. But upshot of the whole Sony press conference, weirdly enough, for me personally, was Shadow of the Colossus. That game wowed me. Just the visuals of that remake and the tone and the music, that game wowed me. I know that game's been around forever, and I in fact own two copies of Shadow of the Colossus, neither of which I have played. But that's mainly because they're old, and there's so many other things to do. Like, I'm still playing Zelda. I'm doing my second dungeon now. There's just other things on my plate. But a new Shadow Colossus game with those graphics and that look and feel? Yeah, I want that. I definitely want that. So moving on from there, we'll probably talk more about Shadows in a bit. But Nintendo, I talked about it earlier in the show. My highlights were Pokemon, obviously, a new Pokemon from the ground up for the Switch being developed. And right now, I'm happy about that. Probably my most excited thing coming out of Nintendo. Metroid Prime Samus Returns looks incredible. And Metroid Prime 4. Those are the three things I'm interested in when it comes to Nintendo. Yes, I am not interested in Mario Galaxy. Surprise. Oh, sorry, Mario Odyssey. I'm not going to look down on you if you don't like any of these things, or if you do like things I haven't named as my top couple things for me from E3. This E3 had a diverse lineup. That's a massive positive, I'll say, in its favor. I'm really happy about that for people. So pretty much everyone got at least something they were really interested in. I don't think there's a lot of people who... So there is a lot of people who looked at this E3 and didn't see anything that truly floored them. That was the case until I saw Shadows of the Colossus. Actually, there is one more thing from Sony. Spider-Man. Spider-Man looked cool. The post-conference coverage of Spider-Man has had me more interested than the conference coverage of Spider-Man. That game looks incredible and moves amazingly. The more I saw of it outside, or heard about it outside of the conference, I'm interested in that it is a unique universe. I don't know if I need another Spider-Man universe in my life right now, especially since I'm not a massive Spider-Man fan. That's probably like the largest reason I'm not interested in it personally. But you know what? If that game's good, I'll probably pick it up. If it's good. And with knowing that's Insomniac, it could very well be very good. But we'll see. So with that, I'm just going to take a moment here to just say about my top couple of things here from E3. I know I've been doing that for the last couple of minutes, but I mean like I'm picking a literal favorite. So I've got a couple of big overarching categories here. Let's just name them off, and I'm making them up on the fly, but I already had them kind of in mind. Best graphics, obviously. Best looking game will be one category. Best music. I wonder who's going to win that one. Best surprise. And most and best feel, best feels, and by that I mean most jolly, pretty much. Game that you look at it and go, that game makes me feel good that it exists, or that game, just knowing that game's coming out makes me feel good. So those are my four categories: best looking game, best music, best surprise, best feels. And oh yeah, sorry, obviously number five, game of show. Sorry, I'm typing this out just so I remember as I go on. Apologies for the typing sounds, but there we go. So we'll start with best looking game of E3 2017. I think that if I was to grade them, my top couple would probably be Anthem would be up there, definitely. The Last Knight would be up there, that 2D pixel art, well, 2D, 3D pixel art Blade Runner game. I'm going to keep saying that just so people know what I'm talking about. Shadow of the Colossus will be up there. Again, this is best looking rather than best graphics. Like, the graphics of Shadow of the Colossus aren't that particularly amazing, but it does have an amazing look to it. But some reason it may even be like disqualified because it's just a remake, but nah, it still looked great. Like, that horse riding through those plains with that mane fluttering the wind and the Colossus in the distance, is something about that, man. And then Dragon Ball FighterZ. So those would be my my top couple. So Dragon Ball FighterZ, Anthem, Shadow of the Colossus, and the Night of. And I'd throw in God of War there. Even though I didn't like their showing, God of War does still look fucking incredible. But I would say, like, best looking game of E3, just so I'm tempted to say Anthem because of just the technical prowess shown in that demo. If this is best looking game technically, Anthem would probably win it, I would say. But it's just best looking game overall. And honestly, that's probably between, Dark Horse candidate, I'd probably say Mario Odyssey, just for the visual design of that game. But it's not gonna win. I'd say it's really between God of War and Shadow of the Colossus, I feel, just in terms of a game that just really wowed me personally. Overall package of not only the graphical quality, but also how it comes together and the just the overall feel of the look of a game. I don't know if that does make sense, but you know what I mean. But I think to some extent Shadow of the Colossus is cheating, not only because it's a remake, but also because the UI, I bet the UI was disabled for that. Like, I don't know how much of that game. I'm going to look it up. You know what? I'm going to look it up. Shadow of the Colossus. This is actually harder than I thought it would be. Like picking a best looking game. You know what? Because it's a remake, I'm going to disqualify Shadow of the Colossus. In my heart, Shadow of the Colossus wins. That's the game that wowed me. But because it's a remake, I'll disqualify it because it isn't doing something new. Like, I saw a shot-by-shot remake of the current trailer in the old engine, like, from bits of the original Shadows. And, yeah, it doesn't look that much. But, like, that original game looks so incredible at this game. It kind of diminishes how good this game looks. Yeah, wow. That original game. Holy shit. I should play it, but I'm not gonna. So I'm gonna give it to God of War. God of War, like, just, I hated that trailer, but in actual just looks, the straight up looks, that game, like, Jormungandr at the end of that trailer looked incredible. The sea looks incredible in that trailer. The every enemy and the design and Kratos and freaking, man, yeah, holy cow, that game just looked so good. But if I was to, so that's probably my best looking game. But since that's a second showing, I'll give an honorable mention to The Last Knight. God of War just by default wins it, and Shadow of the Colossus is disqualified, but The Last Knight is therefore my second place contender. Best looking 2.5D game I have ever seen. Holy shit, that game. The Lost Night, man. I think that game became a worldwide like word of mouth piece just because of how damn good it looks. Holy cow. If you haven't seen that trailer, go watch it. But yeah, so God of War, best looking game, 2017. Second place going to The Last Night. Alright, let's have a look here. And third place for reference, by the way, is Anthem. I'll do the top three. Why not? Best Music 2017 or E3 2017. Okay, I'm just going to say that up front. Mario Odyssey wins. That freaking... I can't get around it. Like, the freaking... That wonderful, wonderful track to the trailer. Even though I have zero interest or almost zero interest in Mario Odyssey, I cannot put aside the fact that that music is amazing. They did such a great job with that, those old school tunes in Mario. That look, that feel of that music is just so nice. Yeah, they win this. They win this category. Let's see if we can come up with a second and third place. I would say Life is Strange, the track they chose for that trailer was fantastic and really gives you a good feel for the fact that they are keeping to the feelings of that original game, like Life is Strange 1. Like, they're keeping those feels in Before the Storm. So that's probably up there. Shadow of the Colossus is up there, but disqualified. as is Metroid Prime Samus Returns, also disqualified because it's a remake. So I'd probably say maybe Monster Hunter World. That was kind of interesting. Ni no Kuni 2, maybe? There's pretty good music there. Kirby, maybe? Nothing's really, like, standing out to me. Beyond Good and Evil 2, I'm not going to award it anything because it was a CG trailer. A CG trailer for a game that... I don't know if it's going to be what people want it to be. To be fair, like, Final Fantasy VII Remake was a CG trailer a while ago, and that got plenty of accolades from us and applause and accolades from everyone. But you kind of already know what Final Fantasy VII is going to be. Like, it's going to be Final Fantasy VII. It'll have a new twist on it, but you know what Final Fantasy VII Remake is going to be. We do not know what Beyond Good and Evil 2 is going to be. And so, like, I don't feel the same about this when it comes to the CG trailer and accepting it as up there. But you know what? Dark Horse Candidate, now that I think about it, like I really think about it, The Last Night is my runner-up. So you have Mario Odyssey as the winner of Best Music 2017, runner-up being The Last Night, and third place going to Life is Strange Before the Storm. Best Surprise of E3 2017. If I was to pick this as a personal pick, like just me, cynic, I would say Life is Strange Before the Storm. That is my personal best surprise. But I think for what I've seen of the community, what I've seen of like the overall consensus and seeing the reactions of the other guys in the crew, I would say, like, speaking for the crew and trying to take that broader perspective on things, I'd say best surprise of E3 2017 was probably Shadow of the Colossus. That, I think, surprised the most people. Second place would be Monster Hunter World. It was leaked, but it still blew everyone who likes Monster Hunter away, and I would say third place would be freaking Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle, because everyone thought that game would be hot garbage, but it turns out that it actually could be pretty great. So, in fact, that might win. I don't know. I refuse to personally award it a win, even though it might deserve it. But so I'm going to give it to Best Surprise of E3 2017, Shadow of the Colossus, with the runners-up being freaking Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle and Life is Strange Before the Storm. All right. Best Feels 2017. And by this, I'm going to expand it. So yes, it has to make me feel jolly. It has to make me feel good inside. But I also have to... I'm also going to expand it to games that just gave you a tone. That struck a tone and executed on it. And made you like feel that. Best tone of 2017. This might be like a weird award to people. But E3 is about selling a dream. It's not about the final game. A lot of these games are either going to be way better than anyone would suspect or will suspect. There's very high likelihood that Beyond Good and Evil 2 is going to be total garbage when it comes out. That's a very distinct possibility. God of War, I hated the trailer. It would definitely not win this freaking this award. But it might be an amazing game. So E3 really does show nothing or very little about what a game is. And to that extent, I would say that what it really does is sell the feeling, tone, and overall like expectation for a game that's coming up, whether it be through a trailer or the gameplay, like demos, etc., like last year's God of War demo. It has to sell the dream of a game. And that's what I mean, and that's what I'm trying to encompass with this best feels category, where it's the feeling of a game when you see it that first time that just makes you go, wow, or laugh out loud, or cry, or whatever. Like, the best feel is probably actually one of the most important things about E3, from my perspective, and what it actually means as a viewer and watcher and follower of what E3 has become in terms of just like a place where you go to see the latest, greatest dreams that the publishers want to sell you from E3. So for best feels, I'm going to say this isn't going to win it. It's only going to be in top three, but as a great... an important piece for the people, Metroid Prime 4 would be up there. All they did was show a starry night sky, or space as it were, and have a little bit of music and a title screen, but a lot of people would have gone insane for that, and that's all I needed to show for a lot of people, and that's great. I think that's very up there. I would say that The Last Night is a strong contender. That music and that visual style, it really did just go towards creating a feeling of Blade Runner, of a cool cyberpunk world that you want to just revel in. That trailer was all tone. It was all tone. You didn't see anything of the plot. You didn't see much beyond the graphics and the music. And that's all it needed. And it freaking nailed it with that trailer. So that's definitely up there. It may not win it, but definitely is up there. What is up there, though, and I hate giving it this, but it's largely because of the music and just because of how jolly it is. And I will never, ever say that this game isn't jolly. Mario Odyssey. Holy shit. Just dripping with style and jolliness and happiness, and just the wonder of discovery. Mario Odyssey is really up there for this category in terms of best feels for 2017. E3 2017. Beyond there, Shadow of the Colossus. I will allow it in this category only because the fact that no one expected the remake, just in the same way the Final Fantasy VII remake, I think, would have been acceptable for this category, is I think that the surprise plays into why it felt so incredible to view that trailer for the first time, and the feelings that the trailer engenders in the audience of wonder and awe are important because of the fact that it's been remade. It's because of the fact that seeing those images realized in a new modern console is breathtaking. And that if I was to pick a feeling for that trailer, it would be awe.
And that is a difficult feeling to strike. So it's definitely in the contention for best feels of 2017, up there with Mario Odyssey and The Last Night. I would say that Beyond Good and Evil 2, even though I have my significant reservations about what that game will finally be and whether it will even match up to anyone's expectations, that trailer was, again, a tone piece, a great tone piece. You know nothing or very little about the plot of that game, but the music, the visuals, to be fair, it's CG, but, you know, like, games do almost look that good nowadays. So I bet that game will look great anyway. And I've heard from, I read in that Kotaku article for the prototype does look very, very good. So I wouldn't be surprised if the game does actually look that good. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's a PS5 game, to be honest, and Xbox next game. Beyond Good and Evil 2, its ability to be an entirely different game and setting almost, era, definitely, than the original Beyond Good and Evil, but still give that vibe of that Michel Ancel world was fantastic, and it did win over a lot of people. And a lot of people did find it, like, I personally didn't find it funny at all. I found all the characters, like, dislikable, but a lot of people did really fall in love with the monkey and laughed when the pig swore a lot and all that kind of stuff. Like, I can see why people would really get behind that trailer, and I saw people really get behind that trailer. And that's showing at E3. So it could, that's definitely a contender too. Like, definitely the feeling that of, again, wonder and surprise and humor that Beyond Good and Evil gave was important at this E3. Man, you know, I don't want to rattle off everything in this. So I'm going to probably keep it to those, and I'm going to name my top three. I'd say runners up would be The Last Night and Shadow of the Colossus. And it hurts me, but I think just by pure jolliness and fun and excellent music and decent graphics, and showing something new for the fans and really blowing people away, Mario Odyssey takes it for best feeling game, best feels of 2017. E3 2017. That game showed incredibly. And I'm so happy for the people who are looking forward to it. Me personally, couldn't give less of a fuck. But people who look forward to it, it looks great, I think. Look, as an external observer, I think it would look great to you people. Finally, E3 Game of Show. And this I will do as a personal pick. I think everyone would have a different Game of Show from the E3. It's so varied, so varied. So I'm not speaking for anyone. I'm not even trying to. I'm just going to say that up front here. My runners-up are going to be probably... And this is going to be based off, like, you know, honestly, like, it's hard to pick a... I'm going to rewind here. I was going to originally do this showing I was most impressed by. Then I reconsidered and probably want to make it as, like, the games I'm most likely to buy. If I was to pick games from my top couple list of this E3 to buy, sight unseen even, I would pick Life is Strange, Horizon Zero Dawn expansion, Shadow of the Colossus, God of War, Pokemon, and Dragon Ball FighterZ. Those would be my ones I'd buy sight unseen, and Anthem probably. Sight unseen, I'd just purchase them. No question in my mind. I'd pre-order them now if I was into pre-ordering games, aside from Persona games. That said, though, if I was to pick a top three, instead of, like, ones I'm personally excited for and would buy immediately, I'm going to go ones I'm personally excited for: A, had a good showing; B, and had good, like, a good mix of feels, surprise, music, and good look, and good just looking good. Has to be everything. Like, this game has to be everything to me to win this category. And if I was to bring that element into it, I would say that the runners up for this year would be, and these are personal picks. The Life is Strange Before the Storm is a runner-up. Anthem as a runner-up. Surprise. just because I'm just so curious. My level of curiosity of Anthem is past the roof, beyond the roof. above the roof. I don't know. I forget the term for that. Over the roof? I don't know. I would have picked God of War for the game I'm most likely to buy and love. But its showing was terrible, so it doesn't make the cut. So the winner of my gamer show is Shadow of the Colossus. There you go. Looks amazing. Amazing music. Gave me that feeling. Surprised me. That's what E3 is all about. It's not about being a good game. It's not about being the best game. It's just about the overall package and how it's presented at E3. How it sells the dream. The dream I was sold the most was Shadow of the Colossus. And that's why it wins. Also, like, as honorable mentions, I'll throw out there Spider-Man. I'll throw out there Monster Hunter World. I'll throw out there Metroid Prime Samus Returns. There's a lot of games out there that sold me something to some extent. But Shadow of the Colossus sold me a dream. And that's what E3 is about. And that's why it's my gaming show. And with that, that is this cynical supplement for E3 2017. I'm a roundup for E3 2017. Next weekend, we should be doing a normal recording. And I will be talking probably about my extended adventures or my continued adventures in Zelda. That game, I go up on it, then I go down on it, then I go up on it, then I go down on it. Like, I've got really mixed feelings about that game at the moment. I can see why people love it. I need to play more of it to come to a conclusion. I need to play more of it. But with that teaser, I'm going to close this out. Thank you for listening to this hour-long cynical supplement. I wasn't expecting it to go that long, but there you go. I will see you next time. Bye. Oh, wait. I have one more thing to say. Ha! Who would have thought that I would go over time? God, I can't help myself. You may have noticed that this episode sounds slightly different, as it were. And you may have noticed how terrible I sounded during the E3 press conference call-in shows. That's because I was on the road. I wasn't in my house, which I am right now, testing out a new microphone. I was actually just using a lavalier mic plugged directly into my laptop. My laptop has a terrible decoder on it, or encoder, however you want to call it, the digital, so analog to digital decoder or converter. It has a terrible one of those, lots of static, lots of just bad interference between that and the headphone jack, etc. So what I ended up doing in preparation for next time I'm on the move but need to be on the podcast or want to be on the podcast, I got this fantastic little thing called a ModMic 5.0? No, just ModMic 5. ModMic 5. It is by a company called Antlion. So it's the Antlion ModMic 5. There's a couple of different ones available for purchase, but 5 is the latest one, and it has a bunch of little cool, nifty things I might go into. But this seems like a fantastic little thing. Weirdly enough, though, even though I'm using the Antlion USB adapter, it sounds different depending on what computer I'm recording it on. So this recording doesn't sound as good as me recording on my main computer with the same setup. So to give people an idea, and with that preface, I will say that the Antlion ModMic is a microphone that comes with a magnetic attachment that you stick to an existing pair of headphones. So currently I'm using my old Denon headphones. Not my really good Denons, but my bad Denons. That's probably too much information, but whatever. I have a normal headphones, hi-fi-ish quality headphones, that I've just stuck a magnetic base plate to. It's a very small base plate, but talking about like smaller than a penny. A very small base plate. I'd say like 5 millimeters across, and you can do the conversion on Google. You stick that to your headphones, and then the mod mic is a boom mic that's very similar to a headset mic, like any other headset, that's magnetically attached to that. And what you get is a really, really high quality microphone that you can attach to any headphones to make a headset. And it's a fantastic little thing. So the microphone in the 5.0 variant has two different patterns, of which I'm using the omnidirectional pattern at the moment. There's two, there's cardio and omnidirectional, and you can look up what those mean if you don't know. Omnidirectional picks up more bass, a little bit more room noise, which is potentially a negative, but also like it's a little bit more natural sounding, which I prefer. I can give you like a quick example here. This is it in, oh God, that spiked it like crazy. This is it in unidirectional mode or cardioid mode, which I don't particularly like the sound of. It doesn't sound that much worse, but it does sound kind of bad, I think. And I think it picks up more background. It has a different hiss in the background. Like it's got static in how I've got it set up, and I think it's got a worse and different static signature. And I'm going to switch this back quickly. All right. I'd have to like make sure I cut out those massive spikes there. But yeah, so like it is a really good sounding attachment, and I'm just really surprised by like how well it works. The magnets are very strong, and I would have thought they were shitty, but they're very strong. The build quality is fantastic. And essentially the 5.0 package comes with a microphone, which has those two patterns, whereas before in the 4.0 package, you had to pick which pattern you want, whether you want cardioid, which you heard earlier, and omnidirectional, which you won't have now, or you're hearing now. It's got a pop filter, and it's got a mute switch, that comes with it. And it's the 5.0 is actually modular. So it's got the microphone that ends in a small cable. It's got a 1 meter cable. Extension to that you can plug directly into whatever you want to. It's got a on-off switch, and it's got a 2 meter cable, and you can put those in any order. So you can go microphone, 1 meter cable, on-off switch, 2 meter cable, or you can go microphone, on-off switch, 1 meter cable directly into your computer, which is what I've got going right now. And you can do like any mix and match of that as you want. You can not put the on-off switch at all if you don't want to. It's a great little modular setup. And it also means that if any part of it gets damaged, unless it's the actual part that's directly connected to the microphone, you can just replace it because they're just extension cables. That's fantastic. It's really good for longevity of the headphone, of the microphone. But above and beyond, like audio quality-wise, I'm just really surprised. So this is connected to the Antlion USB. It's not a sound card, but a USB adapter, which essentially has a headphone out and an audio out, has two separate jacks. And it's got a very strong, I'm not sure if it's high quality, but it's a very strong headphone amplifier in there. So my laptop, which previously could barely power my headphones, now easily powers my headphones. In fact, I have to keep it down at like 20% volume to 30% volume now. And you also get like a really nice microphone input that doesn't have the interference pattern that's common for most computers. It doesn't have a particularly clean pattern. It's not perfect. It's still got a little bit of a buzz in the background, so you have to do some audio processing on that to get that buzz out. But in general, or if you're like using Skype or a similar program that automatically does it, so you don't have to worry about the buzz. But in general, it just sounds so clean. Almost as good as my Blue Yeti, which I use for normal recordings. And the wonder of a headset is that it's consistent. So I don't have to worry about, like, frequently in my Blue Yeti recordings or main podcast recordings, if I'm pointing my head in a different direction, it can, like, make the levels just go crazy and get more echo into the sound and so on. Like, there's definitely been recordings I've done which have been far from perfect because I've moved my head or been very, like, articulate with my emotions, etc. And you have to be very deliberate about speaking into the microphone if you're using a desktop microphone at close range. If you can set it to far range and hack the echoes and not worry about that stuff and use it any way you want. But if you want like that studio sound, you want a close range, minimum gain, and just speak directly into it. Or like it's slightly offset to the side so you don't have the plosives and the breath sound. But with this, I can move my head around, I can gesticulate, I can do whatever I want, and it always sounds good because it's tacked to the side of my head. I know that sounds like so obvious when it comes to like the benefits of a headset, but usually with headsets, I'm just continually disappointed by the sound quality. But having the quality as well just really makes this an amazing package. So there you go. I just wanted to do a little shout out there for this great little product. I'm not sponsored by them. We're not sponsored by them in any way, shape, or form. I bought this with my own money and all that kind of stuff. I just wanted a solution that would mean I don't sound freaking terrible next year's E3 if I'm traveling again, or next recording if I'm traveling again. I will have this microphone as a fallback at all times, and that's fantastic. I'm just going to be my travel microphone, and it sounds great. It's also going to be my PS4 microphone, because you can hook it up with the USB adapter and get it work with your PS4. So that's awesome too. So yeah, Antlion ModMic 5. There's the 4, which is way cheaper. This retails for like 70 or so in the US, $99 here in Australia. But I think it's worth it. If you're into making recordings, it's worth it. It does really blow every other headset microphone out of the water that I've ever heard. On YouTube, etc. Like I listened to quite a few things before deciding to purchase this. I was almost going to get a Sennheiser Game 1, I think it was, or Game Alpha, something like that, headset, the $300-something headset. I was going to get that, but instead I just got this mod mic and a new pair of headphones, just because I wanted to, because I had that extra money sitting around. So there you go. That's it for me. Now I'm actually going to end this podcast. Is anyone out there? Is anyone listening? I hope not. We already finished the show. This is just a mic test for anyone interested between my mod mic and my Blue Yeti desktop microphone. You can hear them side to side now in this recording, in case you're interested in purchasing a microphone for long-term use. The Blue Yeti is obviously less useful because it can't be really taken on the road and can't really be hooked up to your PS4 and all that kind of stuff and made into like a normal headset, etc. But I think it does sound quite a bit better. Let's just say if the Blue Yeti is a 95% and the mod mic would be a 90, so like a little bit better. And just for fun, I met a podcast listener in real life, and I want to just do a shout out for him. So, Times New Roar Man, fantastic news name. Here's a shout out to you. But aside from that, hey, in case you're wondering, that's what the Blue Yeti sound like compared to the mod mic.